Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm Michael DeCamp, your host, and I am here with...
Angela DeCamp.
Co-host extraordinaire. And we are excited to present to you another Cutter's Notch podcast. As usual, we're going to start off talking about books that we have read or we're currently reading or whatever, something that meant something to us. I am going to talk a little bit about two books. One.
Hey, that's cheating.
Well, you know, I'm allowed to cheat. This is my podcast. So yeah, this is the way it works. You know, when you own the equipment and you run the podcast, you get to kind of cheat.
All right. So, I'll keep that in mind the next time.
Well, here. Yeah, there you go. So you should be excited about this one because your boyfriend gave me this for Christmas. But I have started reading the book Dune by Frank Herbert. Our guest is Jennifer. How do you pronounce it again?
Tromner.
Jennifer, have you read Dune?
Yes, I have.
Well,
do you like it?
I have feelings about it.
Okay, interesting.
I've not read it. I've started reading it, and I'm 32 pages in. I find it to be a complicated read. I'm going to enjoy it, but it's going to take me a while to read it. So, thank you to
Taylor Dane, my Taylor boyfriend.
a little brain fart there. Just his name just blanked right out on me.
By the time this podcast airs, Valentine's Day will be over, so maybe he won't be my boyfriend anymore, depending on how that goes.
Oh, dun, dun, dun. Well, let's hope that's not the case, right? For his sake.
Please be nice to me.
Okay. So, my other book, the book that I actually means something to me since I'm an author, and Jennifer, I'll ask you if you read this one too, but it's Stephen King's book on writing.
Oh yeah. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. I thought, this is a really good, if you're out there and you're thinking about becoming an author or writing a book, this is a great memoir to read because it just helps you to work through, it explains how Stephen King's process of writing came about and developed and basically what he does as he writes. And he listens to a lot of really loud music while he's writing. I don't get that. I can't figure out how he can do that. I have to have it more quiet. But that's the difference between one person and the next person, right? So I would recommend Stephen King's On Writing.
Well, thinking of what you can listen to while you're focusing, I found on Spotify a playlist of, is it binaural beats or binaural beats? And it's like the type of music sound waves are actually scientifically proven to help your brain focus. And it's actually pretty cool. And I can't usually work or do things like that while I listen to music, but you should give that a try if you're interested.
What's it called again?
Binaural beats, I think. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly because I've only ever read it. And one time I said Ouroboros out loud, but I thought it was Aruboros. And Taylor gave me a lot of shame for that. So sometimes I'll read things, but I say them out loud and they're not actually how you pronounce
them. I mean, how many times are you going to say Ouroboros like out loud?
Right. Well, now I say it a lot out loud because I'm like, I know how to say Ouroboros.
Well, now you got it.
Yeah.
But Taylor gave you a hard time about that.
He did. If I say things incorrectly, which hardly ever happens, then he will sometimes give me a little bit of a hard time. Don't think he actually doesn't give me a hard time. He'll be like, it's this. Like, just quickly, like, oh, you mean this? Like, he's trying to correct me so that I say it correctly. Like, doesn't do it in a mean way, but.
I have a bad habit of correcting stuff with other people that doesn't matter. And I think I've decided I've got a little bit of OCD.
I don't think that's true.
You don't think so? Yeah. Well, I do. I mean, somebody will say something about something and it really doesn't matter at all that I correct it or make it. But I am like driven to make sure that they know that what they just said was not accurate.
Right.
Sometimes people are just annoying. Particular.
It's annoying though. It's got to be annoying to people. And so I'm really trying to work on that.
But I think it's worth noting that OCD does not mean what you said just there, just well, so you know.
I'm obsessed and compelled.
Yeah, OCD is an anxiety disorder.
Yes. Right. So,
but I have some anxiety about making sure I get that right. It's like lining everything up on the bookshelf. If you looked at my bookshelf when I was a kid, all my books weren't put in by alphabetical order. They were put in by size, and they were put in like that. And so I have a certain little bit of that. It's just a touch, but it's annoying.
Right.
But anyway, so what's your book?
I'm about to, well, I just finished a book this morning and I've decided that I'm going to dive into the classics again. I'm going to read Sense and Sensibility, this book. I've read a few of Jane Austen's work, and I, you know, when I was in high school and I was like all into like love and things, I got really into like, you know, Pride and Prejudice and all that. And I always really liked the film Sense and Sensibility, but I never actually read the book. And so when we picked up this copy at Indie Reads Books, used books and new books, mm-hmm. I got really excited about reading it. So I'm probably going to embark on that next.
They made a film of that?
Several.
Really?
It's Jane Austen.
It's not my genre.
Wow. I'm not surprised to hear that.
But I have two daughters, so I've watched a lot of films like that, but it's not my preferred choice.
No, it's not for everybody. But and I hesitate going back into it because having read a lot of contemporary stuff recently, like, you know, the language and the flow of it is just so different. And you have to, going back into a different time period, it's like the flow of conversation is just so different. So,
oh, yeah. Like yeah. There's a completely different pace to it.
Right. It's like a different kind of way of chewing food. Like, I don't know. It's like you're eating a different kind of meal. So you have to chew differently. I don't know why I'm talking like that.
Now I'm thinking about like that old thing. Like you got to chew every bite 100 times before you swallow. And it feels like that, doesn't it?
Right. It does. It does.
What about you, Jennifer? Do you have a book that you want to talk about, or is it, am I putting you on the spot?
Oh no, I'm good. I recently read Two Dark Moons by Avi Silver. And it's kind of an indie book. It's about this kind of alternative world. It's strange. The world building is really what got me. It's bizarre. It's interesting. There are two moons in the sky. Mm-hmm. And so this culture kind of creates this zodiac about like which cycles of the moon each moon is in at a given time. And so every child when they're born is assigned a personality, a gender, and everything based on what their cycles of the moon are.
That's interesting.
And the main character, she was born under two dark moons, two new moons. And according to tradition, she should have been exiled and, you know, sent to die basically on the jungle floor. And her parents decided to lie about it and say, oh, no. She had like one like sliver of a moon and one dark moon. It's fine. She's fine.
Right. She's legitimate here. Yeah.
And so she's been dealing with that secret her entire life.
Oh, wow.
And then one day she accidentally like falls out of this mountain fortress that she's been living in her whole life and ends up on the jungle floor anyway. And suddenly she has to deal with being alone in this thing that she was basically fated to be in anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's scary and it's cool. And like all of the world building is just so interesting. I've never seen anything like that before.
So you really liked it?
Oh yeah.
I love it.
What's the name of the author again?
Avi Silver. I met them through, you know, Twitter and stuff.
Okay.
But they're fantastic.
Now, I love it when you can read a book that actually, like, you can see what they're describing. You can taste the really quality world building really, I think, makes the rest of it so much smoother. So, yeah, I'm digging it.
Cool deal. Well, Jennifer, you're here because you are an author.
I am.
And, we wanted to bring you in. Appreciate you being willing to come in and be interviewed for the podcast. So tell us a little bit about your background, your history before, not just about the authorship, but, you know, who is Jennifer Tromner? Did I say it right? I'm just afraid I'm going to mess it up. I haven't messed it up yet, but I'm afraid I'm going to. So.
It's a really unusual name. Actually, recently we got... Yeah, contacted on Facebook by somebody who's like, hey, you have the same name as us. That's like nobody on the planet. So we must be related, right? So the last time I went overseas to see my family, like we took a pit stop in the Black Forest and we're like, hi.
Oh, wow.
Oh, sorry. It was in Hessen. But yeah, just like, hi, apparently we're related.
Somehow distantly, maybe. Yeah.
Or they're related to my partner. So
But yeah. I like that you're like, oh, we just stopped in the Black Forest. Not like it's the one of the big forests. Like, it just sounds so casual, but I'm like, ooh, the Black Forest. That's exciting.
Actually, I went to see the Black Forest where my aunt lives.
Right.
I was born in Germany. My mom is German. And so a few years ago, actually, when I was writing the Urban Dragon series, I went back there and, you know, I was kind of doing things with my best friend over there. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, since we're here, can I just like take a tour of the Black Forest? And so my uncle drove me around. I got to ask them weird questions. Like if there was just like a random giant mansion around here, would anyone notice? No, no.
Wow. That's wild. Wow. And you're from Germany.
I am.
And you live in Indy now.
Yeah.
So how did you get from point A to point B?
My mother is German, always has been. My dad came to Germany with his company that he was working for. He met my mom, and after they lived there for a long time, when I was a kid, they moved back to the States.
Wow. That's gotta be an interesting, when did you move over? How old were you?
I was 5, but I've gone back several times. It's still kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. We speak German in my mom's house or in my parents' house. I speak English most of the time otherwise.
That's so cool, though. I mean, I think being able to have two languages is just such a different experience, especially for people in the United States. Many of us only have one, sadly. But that's got to be interesting.
Yeah.
Did you have a German accent when you were 5 years old and came over?
When I was like 5 years old, but I lost it really fast. My brother was 7 at the time, and he had to get speech therapy to get rid of his accent.
I mean, yeah, there's absolutely no hint in your voice at all.
20 years will do that to you.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Like 25. God, how old am I?
Yeah, you just gave it away. So 25 years old. Mm-hmm. So is writing your full-time gig, or do you have another job that you do?
It's my full-time gig.
Yeah. Really? Cool. Cool. How many books have you written?
Depends on how you count them. With the Urban Dragon series, there's 9 books in the series, but I tend to put them in paperbacks as 3 volumes. And so like a lot of people will just be like, oh yeah, that's 3 books right there. And then I've also got Tatter and Shine, which I published a couple of years ago. And that's in an unrelated world. It's just kind of playing with fairy tale tropes and all that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really interesting.
I'm a big fan of the Grimm's fairy tales and the stuff revolving around that.
Well, especially nice. Sorry, like I'm super fairy tales. Like I get really excited about all of that. So, so what has drawn you to those genres?
Well, with the fairy tales, like they're the stories my mom would tell me as a child. When I was really little, like my favorite show, I guess, was this mini series. In English, it's called The Cave of the Yellow Rose, and in German, it's Prinzessin Fantagiro. It's an Italian fairy tale that was kind of done as a pan-European production. It's a hoot to watch it. Very 90s, like very like 1991. It's great. It's basically Mulan. This princess, her family or her country is at war. And so she decides to put on a suit of armor and go challenge the enemy king to a duel. And he's like, okay, I am very gay or that is a woman. Like, holy crap. And so he keeps trying to like trick her into revealing her identity. And eventually he's like, okay, you know what? King, whatever. I don't care. Please let me marry whatever that person
whoever
is.
Whoever you are. Like, you're pretty awesome.
And the war, and then the kingdoms are saved. The war is over. And it's great.
That sounds cool. I wish that we had, well, I guess, do we have it in the US or is that accessible somewhere?
You can see it in some like fairy tale compilations. I think it's traditionally an Italian one.
Okay.
So it's a little bit less known. If you want to look on YouTube, I know that the English version of The Cave of the Yellow Rose is on YouTube.
Nice. I'll have to check that out. I'm kind of a fairy tale fan, so I good information to have.
So you're 25 years old.
30.
30.
Yeah. Hey, actually, we're the same age.
Hey.
High five.
Yes.
So you're 30 years old, and you gave that away. I made you younger, but you fessed up. So you're 30 years old and you're doing the writing gig full time.
Yes.
So how did you get from your earliest stages of writing to this full time status?
I married well.
That's awesome.
Okay.
My partner, when we were when we were dating, he confided in me that like it was his life's ambition to make enough money that I could write full time. And I'm like, okay, put a ring on it.
Yep. Okay. That's going to be nice to hear.
Oh yeah.
So what does he do?
He's a data scientist.
Okay. Yep. Yep. That'll do it.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's got some money coming in and you get to do the full-time writing gig.
Yeah.
So, what was your first work?
Not anything I published. I can tell you that. I worked on one that was about an assassin who, like Fontaguero, dressed as a man in order to do her work and then would like sneak around dressed as a woman so that nobody could like identify that the person making these movements was also the person killing these people. There was another one about a post-apocalyptic scenario where genetically engineered like lion tiger creatures basically destroyed everything. They spread this like world-ending plague, and it turns out they were psychically linked to a bunch of children.
Oh wow.
And that these children could control the animals. It was bizarre.
That's so fascinating.
It was fun. Like one of the driving points behind that was like, what if a post-apocalyptic scenario happened in a castle? Because they are fortified, they're good and protected. Mm-hmm. That's what they're there for. And guess what? Europe is just like swimming in castles.
How old were you when you were writing those things?
That one I was, I think, 18, 19.
Okay.
Like there was a lot of problems with it, but I learned a lot from the writing of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a lot of times how you do things. I mean, I studied art and there's a lot as far as like what I learned in the classroom, but there's so much more that I've learned just like trying and, you know, learning along the way, like, oh, that didn't work.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So the way to do it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. My first attempt at writing was a short story. And actually, I've got a blog that I haven't actually put anything on for a long time, but it's on the blog in its original condition. I've not tried to improve it. I started out kind of fiddling around with some short stories.
What's it about?
It's about a salesman who...
About you.
No.
It's about the death of the salesman by each other.
Actually, it is about the death of a salesman, but it's in kind of a horror kind of fashion. He's not a nice guy. He's really an awful guy. His family doesn't even like him. Mm-hmm. And he's just really, really impatient with everybody. And he just chews everybody out. And just the name of the short story is Hate to Wait. Because he hates to wait in any condition at any time. And I'll never publish this, so other than it's on my blog, but he ends up in a hotel room, and this was based off of a dream I had when I was in a hotel room. I had one of those waking dreams. What do they call those things where you in your dream you're actually where you're at, and you're aware that you're there.
So it's like sleep paralysis.
It's like sleep paralysis. And I could not. I had a dream like that. I was in a hotel. And I couldn't move, and I was sure someone was coming in my room, and I could not move, and I trying to force myself awake. So I had this dream, and I thought, well, how can I turn that into a story? And so I had this really terrible guy, and he's in a hotel, and he offends everybody he runs into all day long, and he ends up in this hotel room, and he basically starts the process of dying, and he can't move. He's aware.
Oh man.
But he can't move. He's frozen in place. And ultimately the Grim Reaper comes to get him, and he says, "I'm sorry I made you wait." Something like that. Oh. So this is the whole Hate to Wait thing kind of played into it. But anyway, it was
nice.
that was my first foray.
So. As a side note, you've experienced sleep paralysis somewhat frequently. I actually have too, and I think I wonder if it's because like genetically
we're connected.
Yeah, we're connected. Yeah.
There's a sleep paralysis gene somewhere.
I don't love experiencing it, but I love the idea,
the concept of it.
Yeah, like you can hallucinate super easily in sleep paralysis. And if you're not familiar with it, you should look it up because it's really cool.
From what I understand, like there's a lot of theories that like succubi and incubi and aliens like demons and stuff that are tied to the hallucinations people have when they're being in that state.
Yeah. It's
I will just say it's really creepy and
awful.
I hate it when it happens. But it did make for an interesting story for me anyway.
Yeah.
I enjoyed writing it. It was terribly written, but it was fun to write. Now I've got another. I started writing a novel probably shortly after that, and I got about 3/4 of the way through the story, and I just stopped. So now it's in paper form, sitting on a shelf up there and probably never be finished. But so how did you, you started out with that, mm-hmm. and now you've got these books published.
Yep.
So how did you transition from that to published?
Actually, when I was working and workshopping, The Bones of Babylon, it was the Apocalypse Meow story.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Apocalypse Meow.
I didn't come up with it, but I love it.
I love that so much.
I was workshopping it with a writer's group. I think the website it's on is now gone, but it was on a writer's group called Agent Query Connect, and where you could like workshop queries and stuff like that to send to agents. And as I was working on this, I met a lot of people. I made a lot of like network connections. And after I had put this story away and, you know, kind of shelved it, worked on something else for a couple of years, one of the people I had made a connection with on Facebook put out a call for her publishing house that she was looking for serialized fiction. Hmm. And so I happened to have this one story that worked really well as serialized fiction. And I kept thinking like, well, these stories don't work as like, you know, full length novel things, but they're more episodic, like a TV show. And I wonder, like, could I do like a Dresden Files kind of thing, but mm-hmm. shorter? And then she wanted something where, you know, there are 9 novels or novellas, sorry, that are each maybe 20, 30,000 words each. And I'm like, hey, I gotcha. Mm-hmm. And so I sent her this stuff, and I was one of several people who submitted my stories or who submitted their stories. And I was one of the ones selected. And so it was with Cliffhanger Press. Unfortunately, after I had submitted all 9 manuscripts for the Urban Dragon series, I submitted the final one, and they're like, oh, by the way, just so you know, there's been some complications on our end, and we have to shut down the press.
Oh, oh fine. No.
So you get the rights back. Have fun.
Aww.
And so then I had this 9 book series that had been trimmed down to like the bone, and I really couldn't expand it into like novels anymore because of just the pattern of it, the timeline right. and all that.
Right. It would be too difficult.
It would be fluffy and padded and kind of bloated.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, nobody wants to read that.
Right.
And so I was just looking at this. I'm like, I've got this finished, really polished product that no real publishing house is going to take, like no like big 6 publishing house. It's just weird. You can sell like 1 book, you can sell a trilogy, but you can't sell 9. Mm. So I said, okay, let's try this whole self-publishing gig. And I did.
So what service did you use?
I used Ingram.
Okay.
Ingram Spark. It's a very common publishing, printing press. In order to use it, you have to like submit your own ISBN number and stuff like that. So I got some of those, which is itself kind of complicated and wonky and oh my God. I played around with it. I got myself a cover artist because I cannot graphically design anything to save my life. And I put it on, and now I sell like the digital copies through Amazon. I sell the physical copies at conventions and through Ingram. You can see them at Indie Reads Books, actually.
Yay, we love them.
Oh, yeah, I love them so much. I used to volunteer there for a few years.
Really? I've always thought about volunteering there, but like, you know, I'm lazier than I should be, but I love it.
It's a bit
I
always, away from right here, so. Like.
Well, I live downtown, oh, so okay. It's convenient for me to be able to go. And actually, my boyfriend lives over in Woodruff Place, so like super nearby where he lives. But I'm a big Indie Reads fan. They've shown my art there before, and I know you've had
a book signing there. Yeah. Actually a couple of book signings. I had a kind of a book release sort of book signing party there for just me. Mm-hmm. Actually we were her art was being shown and I did the book signing same
That's
time.
Awesome. Sort of a father daughter thing. We're weird. Man, we like each other.
What
I guess.
Is up with that?
McElroy 2.0. I mean,
there you go. Yeah. We're not trailblazers, but we're cool trail followers.
Yeah.
I actually Indie Reads in general as an organization is just such a cool.
Oh, it really is. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Do you still do any volunteering with them?
No, I had to stop with that when I started pursuing a library science degree.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Actually, like I tried to pursue the library science degree. I did pretty well. And then it was through a program that only had online classes. And so that left me doing all of my work online all the time. And then like doing my writing online or my writing on my computer. And eventually I was just so isolated, and that mixed very badly with like my existing mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And it was not good for me. So eventually I'm like, okay,
I need to step away. That's interesting.
And honestly, like my partner was like, you know, you're doing fine enough, like with your books.
Why bother? Yeah. Like if you're enjoying what you're doing, you know, just keep doing it.
Yeah.
Sweet deal.
So tell us about your books.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about them. Like who's your target demographic, and tell us all about what's in them.
Probably the demographic for the Urban Dragon series is millennials.
Sweet. That's me.
particularly like queer, main characters are queer. Mm-hmm. It starts with a homeless woman in Indianapolis because, you know, why the hell not?
Right. What to know.
We don't, we have way too many stories set in New York and LA. Right, we want something somewhere else.
Right. And Indy's cool.
That's right.
And so I've got this woman in Indianapolis. She's under a bridge. She sees a dragon under a bridge and she's like, I don't know what I ate, but there is.
That is.
That's a dragon.
So she gets this dragon, kind of nurses it back to health. Turns out it is a shape-shifting dragon. Oh, cool. And so the two of them are like trying to not die because being a homeless woman in this country is just really awful.
Right.
Especially when like people are very physically violent towards the homeless.
I agree.
And so you've got this dragon who's like, hey, this is my best friend. You better not lay a hand on her or I will kill you.
Yeah.
And that's just going to get more problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And so Rosario, the human of this pair, has to keep RK, her friend, in line. And then one day, zombies show up. And so they got to deal with this situation. And now you've got, like, zombies, you've got necromancers, you've got demons, you've got monster hunters who are really not getting the whole, like, we just want to eat thing.
Yeah, yeah.
This played a little bit from like me watching things like Supernatural and Buffy and all that. And nice. I'm going okay, that one was eating people, but like those three just existed and you lit them on fire anyway.
Yeah.
Like, why?
That's interesting. Mm. Now, did they all stay like in Indianapolis or did they kind of venture out into?
Oh, they totally venture out.
Okay. Are they into places that exist or places that, you know?
For the most part, places that exist. So they spend some time in Muncie, Indiana.
Oh, that's scary.
Oh,
my hometown.
I actually had a friend who was working in Muncie. So when I was writing those stories, she took me on a driving tour of it. And she's like, oh, yeah, and that's where there was a gunfight. And that's where there was a meth lab. And that's where.
Oh, that's fun. Do any like Muncie sites make appearances at all? Like anything that people would recognize?
Not in particular, though. There was this fireworks factory and she's like, you gotta have this fight in this fireworks factory and just blow it the hell up.
I know where that is. South Walnut Street.
Oh my goodness.
It's about 20th and Walnut. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did not have it at the fireworks factory.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
Well, that's all right.
Like I just kind of played with like the feel of what she was telling me about the place. Because I didn't want to like have it at a business and then like, oh, by the way, and then we burnt down the business because, right. You know, I'm like, that's just mean.
I love the idea, though, of like all of this fantastic supernatural stuff happening in places that like, you know, if you're local to Indy or have been here before that you would recognize. Like, I like mm-hmm. the idea of, because it just doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would happen here.
Oh, yeah.
But, well, you know.
Well, Dad? Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that you used Indianapolis and that you used Muncie and that you're basically setting your story in Indiana. I did the same thing in my book, Abandoned Hope. It's set in a
fictional
town in southwestern Indiana, but I use it. Actually, there's a little bit of it that happens in Muncie. And then there's mentions of places like Columbus, Indiana and Terre Haute and French Lick and places like that here in Indiana that, you know, I tried to bring that Indiana flavor into it. So I think that's cool. So that's the Urban Dragon story. What's the other one?
The other one, Tatter and Shine, it it pulls together a lot of fairy tale elements. Like I'd call it in the vein of a fairy tale retelling, but it's not of any one specific fairy tale. Mm-hmm. It starts with this princess. She's a self-taught sorceress, but where she's at is way illegal. They just got done with a war with a sorceress empress, basically. And they don't want another one rising up and causing another war. So like they're clamping down on that really hard. And as people are like gaining on her, and she's like, okay, I got to find someone who can take me under their wing and show me how to defend myself. Mm-hmm. So she apprentices herself to the sorcerer Tatterdemalion.
That is a cool name.
I found that name like just reading somewhere. I'm like, okay, I'm keeping that.
Yep. Hold on to that.
And, you know, he's teaching her magic, and she's doing kind of the Frau Holle thing where, you know, you stay with someone, you're being their apprentice by like just doing their dirty work, their laundry, their cooking, their cleaning. And you're like, okay, I'm not learning anything. Mm-hmm. I guess the right term is the Karate Kid version.
Yeah.
Mr. Miyagi-ing it.
That it sort of reminds me too. Have you ever read The Thinking Woman's Guide to Real Magic?
I have not, but now I'm going to look it up.
It's a similar situation in that one. That's what it made me mm-hmm. think of when you were saying like, oh, like the Miyagi type thing it's in that one as well. So.
Wow.
Yeah. This is all my style book, Deb. This is the kind of thing I read.
Right up your alley.
I'm digging this interview.
Yeah.
I hated all the other ones. So.
It's a joke. How did you decide that this is what you wanted to do?
I don't know if I ever really decided. It was more of I couldn't not do it.
Sort of intuitive.
You're compelled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was one point where my dad was like, okay, I think you're addicted to writing. You need to stop. I'm like, no, you need to absolutely stop this right now. And I'm like, okay, I might as well just like cut off my left hand because what am I going to do with it? I told my best friend about that, and she's like, oh, you might as well just cut off your left hand. What are you going to do with
it? Yeah.
Right.
It's interesting. It's actually a kind of an interesting comparison because we previously, a few podcasts back, spoke with Angela Jackson Brown, and she talked about how much she was encouraged to write. And it's interesting how everybody kind of comes to their artistic endeavor from a different source, a different angle.
Yeah.
What kept you going when you were discouraged?
Like I said, like it's not something I can really not do.
Yeah.
Because I have depression, and it's pretty intense depression. Putting myself in other worlds kind of takes me out of myself. Mm-hmm. And that helps me to cope so much better than like I would be able to otherwise.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah. Huh.
Do you feel like the writing process does that, or just thinking of the worlds that you're creating?
I don't know if I can separate the two.
Yeah.
Because like for me, I will often like repeat the same scene over and over again, and I'll like say the scene out loud, and I'm sure I look completely insane, which, mm-hmm. you know, who's to say I'm not. But I'll just repeat the scenes over and over until I get the flow of the conversation proper.
Right.
And eventually, like, I'll move on to something else. And, you know, I'll just say that scene over and over again, and I'll kind of play it. I'll tweak it.
Yeah.
When I'm listening to music, I'll be like, okay, so if we were to set this scene to that song, then it would be like this.
Oh, that's interesting. You can kind of take it and change it a little bit as you go along.
Yeah.
But the reason I ask is because a lot of times when I'm painting, I go through sort of this, like, I get into the zone, and I can't remember. I recently heard somebody talking about it. There's an actual term for it. Where you're in the process and like time just stops. Like you don't realize time is passing. You're just focused on exactly what you're creating, what you're doing. And I was wondering if that was maybe even a similar process to the writing that you guys do.
Flow
state. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. When I get really into writing, I can just go for like ever.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. Cause it just like, it allows you to, like you can't possibly think of any of the other stuff going on or that's weighing on you because mm-hmm. you're just so in the moment. I don't know. And I'm sorry, I totally cut you off.
Oh, no, you didn't. I've gotten in trouble at previous jobs before because like I got a story or a bit of conversation or dialogue in my head, and I'm like, I can't focus on anything else because this is like just on loop.
Yeah.
Can you just give me a minute to like write this down so I can move on?
Yeah. And then you can go on with the day, but yeah, it's, It can definitely be that. And I've actually found myself like sketching little thumbnails like, ooh, I'd love to paint this at some point. I don't usually ever do anything with them, but yeah,
but at least then yeah. you got it in case you want it.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely.
So then when you started writing and you had this, effect that it was having on you, did you have any hesitancy as far as putting it out there for other people to see and read?
I think like for the first couple things I would like show my mom when I would make little stories about like my imaginary little characters. And I would like draw them and like hand them to my mom and she'd just paper the kitchen wall with them.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to like my teenage years, I started writing fan fiction, which
I was going to ask if you did that. Yes. What kind of fan fiction?
The one that I started with was, Lord of the Rings, naturally.
Really? Yay.
And, Avatar, The Last Airbender. Are you familiar?
I'm familiar, but I never watched it or anything. So,
I'd written for like a bunch of different things, just like, you know, a little like one shot for here and there. And then one of my stories like really took off. A lot of people started commenting on it. And I just got really excited because people, you know, they liked what I was writing and they wanted more. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'm writing more of this.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, the most encouraging thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like my mom going, good job, honey.
Yeah.
Because that's like, what moms do.
Yeah, you like you kind of know when you're like your parents are like your stuff's so good and like, yeah, thanks. So I'm glad you think so.
You're doing
you're my parents, so it's nice to have some sort of like outside validation on what you're doing.
And with depression specifically, like you mistrust everything positive because everyone is totally lying to you because it's in their vested interest to lie to you to make you feel better. But when these absolute strangers and like a lot of absolute strangers are telling you that like, no, this is objectively good.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start to actually maybe sort of believe it.
Wait a second. Hold on. No, I like, definitely see that.
We don't have enough money for my mom to pay this many people to like it.
Oh, that's funny. And if so, why is it not coming to me?
I know, right?
Just saying.
Yeah.
Student loans.
So Jennifer, where can the listeners find your books?
You can find my website at jwtromner.com or you can find me on Amazon.
Let's spell Tromner so they get that. So JWTROEMNER.
MN is in Mother Nature, not two of one or the other.
Right. Cool. And so they can get it off your website.
Mm-hmm.
Where else?
Amazon.com.
Can they get the paper version on Amazon too? Or is it just the Kindle?
Yes. Okay. And those will be the three story per volume sets.
Okay. Well, exciting. Exciting.
Thank you.
Well,
question box time?
I think it might be. Ooh.
There's tons of questions in this box, as you can tell. I always give Michael a hard time. I want him to have more in there. I like all the questions. Here you go.
So
don't tear it up. Just put it right back in because we reuse them.
Okay.
But answer
all about recycling.
Yeah.
What is your favorite music genre, artist, and song?
That's a triple question. That's not even one.
Well, you know, there you go. I got multiple
three
stages.
For the price of one.
And it's also a really hard thing because I don't really like listen to music. Like I said, in terms of like genre or whatever, it's more this song is great for this character and this song is great for that like fight scene and this song is great for this couple. So, I guess for genre, like books that I would totally make music videos to or songs I would make music videos to.
That's fun. I've recently read some Sarah J. Maas stuff and she's got like playlists associated with her books. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of fun.
Nice.
I wonder, like, that'd be cool to have like as an, what is it called? It's like an extra part of the book that's not part of the book, but like, hey, listen to this music while you're doing this and you can get the...
Actually, you can find my Urban Dragon playlist on Spotify.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so go to Spotify and
you can go to my Facebook page and there's the Spotify link there.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely cool. I like that. And then you can kind of take it with you when you're not reading.
Yeah.
Nice.
And your Facebook page is JW Tromner also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
So, okay, so let's finish the question there and see how you do.
Favorite artist? I think Digital Daggers is one that I've gotten really into recently.
Okay.
Also Arches. Arches has one that like I associate very heavily with RK, so, you know.
Oh, perfect.
Their song The Black Eye is probably like the most RK and Rosa song ever. the whole idea behind the song is like, somebody has hurt my best friend. She climbed into my bedroom window, like crying. I'm going to give her my favorite shirt to dry her tears. And then I'm going to pick up a 45 and I'm going to drive over to the to the jerk's house. And I'm going to explain to him very kindly why he's never doing that again.
Nice. It's, I love how connected the music that the art, that version of art is to the art that you create.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, Angela, you want to try to take a stab at that question?
Sure. I don't know that I have a favorite genre, and that's a tough one because I think a lot of people like multiple genres, but I can say, I'll just say what I'm listening to a lot of right now. I sort of discovered Red Hearse, which it's an album, and that's the, like, I guess the project, the group name. It's one of the Jack Antonoff things. He's everywhere right now. But I like am so I'm just really obsessed with this album. I can't stop listening to it. The music videos are very weird, and so I'm down with it all. So that's what I'm listening to. Yeah.
Well, I don't have a good answer for this one. I made up the question, but
you got to think about that. Yeah,
I think my favorite genre. I'm a little older than you two. So my favorite genre is probably kind of a pop rock thing. Mostly 70s and 80s. Not so much 80s. They started doing a lot of this, the English, crossover bands. And I wasn't too fond of those.
So that's my jam about the 80s.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like the, techno pop. I didn't really care for that, but the 70s and 80s rock, I really am a fan of the Eagles. Some of their music, Joe Walsh is hilarious. I guess that would be my answer right now. Lately, I've been listening to on Pandora. I've been listening to, the Jason Mraz channel.
Really?
A lot. Yeah. I mean, I enjoy Jason Mraz and they're playing other artists that are similar sounding on the channel. So it's
kind of introduces you to other music that you might be interested in
a little bit. And, I can't think of her song right now, but I just really love when they pop in Norah Jones.
Oh, she's wonderful.
She is just, so smooth.
There's probably a lot of other artists that you could be, that are similar that you would probably really like.
Oh, I'm sure.
You should listen to like a Norah Jones channel.
That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
I might do that. I need to add a couple more channels because I listened to the Eagles channel until I thought that music was, because they played the same songs on a loop. It was like 20 songs.
All right, I've heard them all now.
Really sick of this. They were playing more Creedence Clearwater Revival than they were Eagles on the Eagles channel, which was driving me a little crazy. And then I think I must have accidentally liked, that Iz guy from Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
Think I must have liked one of his songs at some point, because then all of a sudden they started feeding those in. And I like two of his songs. The rest of them, no. I don't like the rest of them, but they're feeding them all in there. So anyway, it was, I probably need to add a couple more channels. So Norah Jones channel sounds pretty good.
I think that would probably increase your satisfaction.
All right. Awesome. So, Angela, I think you have something you want to share with the listeners.
I actually have two things I'd like to share with the listeners.
Okay, please do.
If by this point there is a TV episode of The Dead Files on the Travel Channel that you might have watched, or at this point, I don't really even know when this is airing.
Two and a half weeks.
On February 20th, there would have been an airing of an episode called The Puppet Master that takes place in Indianapolis. And you should watch that. And I'm not going to say why, but you should watch it. The Dead Files.
The Dead Files.
Yes.
Takes place in Indianapolis. The Puppet Master.
Well, this particular episode takes place in Indianapolis. Yes.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I wanted to say was this podcast is available on pretty much all channels where you can get your podcasts. And if you like it, please rate and review us. That'd be cool. That helps people find us.
We would definitely appreciate that. So, Jennifer, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Mike. Angela?
Any last passing comments you want to share with the listeners before we close out?
I'm going to be at Gen Con this year.
Oh, cool.
So that's going to be fun. If any of your listeners are there, then please stop by and say hi.
So you'll have a booth?
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. So you'll have all your books there and people can come and buy them. Jennifer and I have actually, we've been at the same, book event, two or three times now, I think. So she's got quite a selection. I have one book. I have two books now, but I have back then I had one book, and I'd look over her table and she was covered with books. So she's got lots of things for people to pick up. So see her at Gen Con.
Yep.
So awesome. Well, again, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Angela, thank you for a fine job of co-hosting.
Thank you, Michael.
And we will see you all next time on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address: authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel, can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.